and welcome to the Pocket Gamer Podcast. It's episode number 408. My name is James Gilmore, and joining me today is Emily Soden.
Shock horror.
Just Emily Soden. Glenn's away doing things, because it's been the busiest of the weeks, it being Gamescom 2017.
Hooray.
Yeah, and it's been all announcements. We've had half the crew out there wandering around, doing meetings, experiencing new games with their hands and eyes. And we'll be giving you some inside scoops on new things to look forward to, plus all the stuff that we've been dealing with back home. Admittedly, you and I am doing the real work while they wander about.
We hold this thing up. We're like, not Goliath. Goliath was David and Goliath. Which one's the guy that... Atlas holds the world.
Here, you're the guy, yes. The one in the statue with the thing that's on top of the Daily Planet? No, it's not, is it at all? Oh, dear me. I'm so confused about my Greek/comic book lore.
They're both the same thing, really.
It's always got gods and that, and somebody flies now and then. That's it. That's how it works. So lots to cover. We're going to dive pretty much straight in because we've got new announcements to do with Reigns, that game with the cards that's really good and everybody likes. We've got the Talos Principle heading our way. By our, I mean towards a touchscreen. Final Fantasy 15's gone weird. SNES is out. It's not really. It is, but it's not. You don't have it. I know you don't. Glenn's got one, but no one else has. And then a load of Gamescom stuff to come as well. Plus, Darkest Dungeon is out this week, so we talked to one of the creators of that game about how he smushed all that horror onto an iPad. First things first, the news. We were big fans of Reigns, the card game that put you in control of a kingdom and then allowed you to disappoint almost every member of that kingdom over a series of swipes, left and right, Tinder style. Em, you spotted the news today that there are changes afoot.
Yeah, no jokes. No jokes. I love Reigns.
It's good, isn't it?
Like, it's one of my favourite mobile games just because it's so simple. And this whole thing about Reigns, is it called? Oh, God, what was it called?
Her Majesty.
Her Majesty, thank you. I was like, long live the Queen? No, that's the slogan. Yeah, no, Her Majesty is going to be a really interesting take on it because, of course, the first one's all about the king and he's got sort of his kingly duties and, you know, about making an heir and stuff. It's more focused on trying to get the kingdom not to destroy each other or other kingdoms rather than your own internal thing.
Yeah.
Like actually providing lineage and things like that. That kind of got skipped over. Whilst with the queen, I think it's going to be slightly more emotional.
Well, I would hope that it would allow for a different perspective. I mean, it's actually being written by Leigh Alexander, who was a games journo, and has written a bunch of fiction stuff as well. And so I'm hoping for, in the same way as the first one, it had a slightly satirical, you know, dry sense of humour about it all. It was a bit daft, and I'm hoping this will continue in a similar vein. And yeah, offer a slightly different perspective. Let's do the queen thing and see how much she's going to undermine the king or roll his eyes. I think it's going to be quite fitting in this world of Game of Thrones and queens fighting with each other across continents, which seems to be the theme at the minute.
Yeah, I really hope so. I'm very, very excited to see where this next episode of Reigns is going to take us, in all honesty, and just to have it on my device, like now. I can't wait any longer, but I don't know when it's coming out.
Well, before the end of 2017 is the only information we've been given, but you can see the trailer that's up at the minute and gives you a little taste of what to expect. Just go and have a look at that. Now, the Talos Principle. That was a game that came out PC first. I got it on PS4, but it's been around for a couple of years now. They're bringing that to mobile, which I was sort of surprised at. It's already technically gone onto tablets because it went onto the Nvidia Shield. But as we discussed internally, it doesn't really count as coming to mobile because the Shield tablet, you know, it had controls and stuff, and especially the Shield thing that sits under your TV. It is mobile, but it's not really an Android phone or something.
Yeah. It doesn't have the same kind of feel to it.
Well, you're not forced to use touchscreen controls in quite the same way. But it is coming onto mobile phones. Apparently, it will be compatible with iPhones all the way back to the 5S, which was quite surprising because the 5S barely does anything now. I had to abandon mine because it was just wouldn't open Twitter. So I'm impressed by that. But then again, it is a comparatively old game and a good one at that. Thinky, thoughtful, puzzly, a little bit portally, but I liked it, and I hope it turns out well. I can see this being fiddly on a touchscreen, because it's a first-person game all about putting little laser tripods in the right, exactly the right place so they all meet up and unlock puzzles. That aspect of it I could see being a little bit on the side on something like a small iPhone 5S, for example.
I don't know. I think I must be by myself here, but I really don't like virtual controls.
Well, I mean, again, it depends on how they're done, but I think they can work brilliantly when they're implemented right, but there's always been that problem of dragging a first-person shooter or first-person perspective game and dunking it onto an iPad or an iPhone that never quite feels right to me. Yeah. And this will require precision in order to solve its puzzles. And yeah, hopefully they've got it right, though. Hopefully they're not doing it just because why not. But it will be out at some point. We don't know a date yet, but keep your eyes out for that, Talos Principle. Now, Final Fantasy 15. It's not been kind of the glorious return to form that people hoped it would be. Probably something to do with the fact that it had a very, very long and troubled development cycle of about 10 years, and then it came out, and it's this peculiar fusion of new tech, if you like. They're running around using mobile phones and driving cars, mixed with the old school Final Fantasy fantastical elements, and four dudes, pretty dudes in a car, going on a road trip. In some ways, it's very linear, and then it also does open world stuff. It's a confusing thing with a real-time combat system, and it didn't... People were very like, oh, I like this, but I don't like this, and it didn't really reinvent the brand, I think, in the way that Square Enix would have wanted. So the decision's been made to release Final Fantasy XV Pocket Edition for iPhone and Android, and it's... I don't know what to make of it.
It's a little bit weird-looking, maybe.
Well, it's strange. What they've said they're going to do is they're taking the entire story of Final Fantasy XV and putting it on mobile. And it's a fairly big story. It's got about, I can't remember if it's 16 chapters or something, but it's a big old thing, and, you know, fully voice acted and all that business.
Mm.
And what they've done is, rather than obviously do a direct port of that game, which just they couldn't do at this point, I don't think, with the tech, they're taking the story, turning it into a chapter-based game, and making the whole thing look all chibi and cute. In many ways, a bit like the older Final Fantasies, like, for example, 7 and 9, where they all have, like, you know, short, squat things with cute little faces and all that business. But it's in, but they're reinventing all the same scenes from the console game.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, it could be kind of fun. It reminds me of like a 3DS game. A little bit.
Yeah.
Am I weird in saying that?
No, because it looks cute and JRPG-y, whereas the new versions of Final Fantasy have increasingly moved away from that Final Fantasy VII squashed, you know, chubby characters, and obviously the 2D of the earlier 16-bit and 8-bit versions, and towards a more photorealistic look, starting with 12 and then going all the way through to 15, where, you know, it looks real. You know, when you're in the driving car bits, it looks like you're driving down a road in a, you know, desert-looking place out in Nevada or something in the States, until a massive weird four-winged dragon flies over, and then you go, oh yeah, this is Final Fantasy. So this, in many ways, feels like a step back towards the old, cute, daft Final Fantasy series of old. But it looks like they're doing a light version of the game.
Yeah, because there's only 10 chapters, isn't there?
Yeah, they're condensing it all into 10 chapters. I think the combat will pop up, but it's going to be a very basic version of it. I think it's just going to be like, if you wanted the story without all of the open world exploration and the billions of side quests and all of that, this is that version. So just almost, people are saying like maybe it's like a Telltale version of the game where it just focuses mostly on the story with a bit of combat thrown in for good measure.
Yeah. I mean, it could turn out to be quite good. The online response, actually, I was just keeping an eye on it when it was announced on Twitter and stuff, seems to be very positive.
I think people like the fact that it reminds them, at least visually, of old Final Fantasy. That's a nice take. And it's just something a little bit different. But there is also that angle for me that this is a game that had a troubled development and it's taken them 10 years to make it. The game probably hasn't sold as well as they'd want. And they've gone, God damn it, we recorded all this voice acting. We're going to use it. We're going to use it again. We're going to put it in this other version. Screw it. Like, we're going to make use of these assets and make use of this story and try and push it out to more people. I don't know if this would happen if the game had been a massive blockbuster success and everyone bought it and it reviewed through the roof. I might be wrong, but it's just speculation. I get the feeling they're like, we need to make something of this.
Sounds totally plausible, in honesty. I think I'd do the same thing in their position.
But we don't have the release date. We just have a trailer, and it's an oddity. I've not seen anything quite like it before. So go and have a look. If you were on the fence about Final Fantasy 15 and didn't want to invest 100 hours, this might be the way to play it. Also, speaking of repurposing of old games, Secret of Mana is getting a 3D remake. Now, the trailer appeared and went very nice. Looks all cute and 3D and like bags of character, and Matey still got his spiky hair and his red hairband like you remember from the original Secret of Mana. But it's also coming to PlayStation Vita, which is very good news. Which then prompted the question, why not the Switch? Where's the Switch port? Anybody?
God knows. I don't know. It's what a lot of people I saw on the forums and stuff being like, oh, why wouldn't they just bring it to something more current? And I said to someone in the comments on one of the articles that maybe it's sort of a bit of a testing phase. Because surely if Secret of Mana being such an iconic RPG, logic to me would say push out on as many platforms as possible.
Yes, and also that kind of thing tended to live on Nintendo consoles. You know, it was a SNES game originally, I believe. My feeling is that PlayStation has gone in with a bit of an exclusive here, because PlayStation are pushing it at the moment, and it's advertised on Steam, PS4, and PS Vita. So I'm wondering if they've paid for a little bit of period of exclusivity, and then later it's going to appear on the Switch and maybe the 3DS, 2DS, I should say, because that's the current one now. So I wouldn't be surprised if this did kick over onto other platforms as well.
I would assume so. I mean, it just seems mad. I mean, if Microsoft can do that to Tomb Raider, then surely PlayStation can do it to everything.
Yeah, quite. We do have a date for this one. February the 15th, 2018 will be the date for it. But you can go and have a look, see the new voices, see the new art, and see the cool-looking Griffin thing with a crazy hairstyle. He's dead cute. We like him. We did mention the SNES Classic. As we were talking about in previous podcasts, we'd said, oh, it would come out, and then it would sell out within 10 minutes. It did come out. The North American version sold out within minutes of launching, as expected. It's going to be appearing on September the 29th. That's when it's going to physically get released. And expect to see extremely high prices when you walk in the shop. And probably it's only going to be sold in bundles, which is what I've been seeing now. They've like sold out all the single units, and then they'll be selling it for like $150, $200 with an extra controller and, you know, some other thing. Because they've got to make that, money. And they just know that they're in such high demand that, you know, they can charge what they want at this point.
Yeah, but it really annoys me. Like, not even just the fact of the shortage of it, but the fact that when they advertise these kind of launch dates for them, normal people just, you know, go to sleep. Because this was, like, what, 2 a.m. in America? People just go to sleep and stuff. And then the people who buy these things through different accounts harvest them and then resell them at an extortionate price are the people who get these consoles.
It's very open to exploitation, and we've discussed it in the past. When you limit the stock amount this much, then you're opening it up to scalpers and people exploiting the market, and that's a real shame. And I've seen some analysis online, other people talking about this, that you could argue that Nintendo didn't know how popular the NES Mini would be. I think it's naive to think they didn't, but you could argue that. But with this one, you can't make that argument anymore, because they know what's going to happen. They know it's going to sell out in a second.
It's been happening like for the past year. Each thing that Nintendo has been pushing out, people have been snapping up within seconds. I mean, all of the Switch news that I've covered, it's like, you know, you have to kind of withdraw your hand from it, because these things just go.
Yeah, as soon as you publish a story saying the Switch is back in stock, it's already out.
Yeah, exactly. That's why, like, when I bought my Switch, I bought mine and then I did the news piece.
That's not bad. That's terrible. That's anti-consumer journalism. Emily Soden, outed on this podcast. My God.
Oh, it's fine. No one listens to us anyway.
Why do you hate your readers?
No, well, to be fair, I did it both at the same time.
Yeah. Ordering with one hand and pressing publish with the other. Disgusting behavior.
I regret nothing.
All right, so apologies if you didn't get one, but don't worry, you're in the majority there. Now, as you all know, Gamescom's been going on this week. Generally speaking, all the big releases, you know, and the news coverage is over on console. A few of these things got released, like, for example, the Secret of Mana stuff. That's part of the Gamescom announcement that we've had. But we have had people over there. Harry and Dave have been over there from Pocket Gamer, and they've been wandering around. They've been playing new games and all that business. I'm not going to cover them all here because A, I haven't played them, and B, Harry's been writing them all up on PG. And there's a whole bunch of cool new things to go and see. I want to focus on like one or two of them, though, specifically a game called Bury Me, My Love, which is the one that caught my eye from the games that Harry played, which is, he says himself, like the weirdest game to be playing on a show floor because it's kind of an SMS WhatsApp-style game. We've seen a few of those, actually, now. The Mr. Robot one was the high-profile game that used the text service to tell a story. This one is sort of grim in so much as you play as this character called Noir, who's traveling from Syria to Europe. You play as her husband, and you're basically getting the experience from her end. She's texting you about what it's like to try and be a migrant and be on the migrant trail, and you're sort of talking her through it, and she's updating you with all the information and all the things, often bad, that are happening. And so it's a game about, you know, relationships and trying to keep people sort of upbeat through awful things, which is a really interesting angle for a video game, given that, you know, people tend to want to play these things to escape. They often shy away from hard messages. We've had things like This Dragon Cancer and This War of Mine, both of which focus on very dark topics. And recently on console, obviously, we've had Hellblade, which is focusing, you know, very much on mental health. So it's encouraging to see these kind of games that focus on, you know, quieter voices and more challenging topics, I think.
Yeah, I think when covering these sorts of topics, like, if you do it right, they can be magnificent. I mean, This War of Mine is one of my favourite games. Hellblade is magnificent because of its sound and its, like, representation of psychosis in general.
I'm looking forward to playing that, finally.
Yeah, you should. Oh, my God. I can't play it past a certain point because it freaks me out too much.
Okay, that's a good sign.
As in, you know, in the evening, if it's gotten dark outside, I'm like, oh, I'm scared.
So I would suggest you go and read Harry's write-up of that. It's called Bury Me, My Love. We're going to be keeping a close eye on it. Another thing that he mentioned that looks, on the other end of the scale, daft but fun, is Metal Fist, which has sort of the cartoonish art style of something like a Team Fortress or even a Brink. Remember Brink? It's just gone free-to-play. That multiplayer shooter that really didn't take off, but looked good. But it's kind of got the gameplay of a Super Smash Bros. So lots of characters running around on screen, multiplayer, pounding the crap out of one another. And Harry said, actually, even though it looks colourful and lightweight, that there is sort of something to it. And there's a trailer up, and I'd like a go. It looks fun. It's kind of fizzy and daft and energetic, and it could be a bit of a laugh. So, yeah, Metal Fist. Go and, again, check out the trailer for it and see if it might be to your tastes. Darkest Dungeon is a game that's been floating around on PC and other platforms for a little while now. It is one of the more masochistic RPGs to appear recently, and also a game that delights in driving not only the players to madness, but also the characters in the game itself. I'm joined by Tyler Sigmund, the game design director for Darkest Dungeon. Thank you for joining me today.
My pleasure.
Now, the game has literally just gone live as we speak and is appearing in app stores all over the world at the minute. Nerve-wracking?
Oh, yes, definitely. There's always forget a little bit about storefronts take time to propagate. So, you know, we pick a release time and then we kind of set up our marketing and social media around that and our support team and everything. And then, you know, we press the button and then you forget that it's actually not always an instant thing. So there's always a little bit of a moment where you're hoping it'll actually appear.
Starting off with just the connection to mobile, people will probably have heard about the game before, but I've noticed from watching the videos and having a quick play that it's a game of two halves. You've got the battling aspect of the game, where you're guiding characters through dungeons, corridors, in this sort of two-dimensional side-scrolling sort of way, and taking part in turn-based battles, much like a classic RPG.
Yep.
The other half of the game is people returning back to a little village, a little hamlet, and then recruiting new characters to fight with you in the dungeons and, you know, upgrading the buildings and blacksmithery and that sort of thing.
Yep.
which I immediately clocked as a mobile gamer, that's very mobile-oriented style of gameplay. We've got a lot of games which are based on go out and fight, then come back and build up a little base gradually by upgrading things. Is that just coincidental, or did you have this in mind when you were going in?
Yeah, I mean, I think that probably one reason that it's appearing a lot is that's a really satisfying loop, actually. I think it's fun to... It's fun to have those kind of like two halves to think about. And then it gives you, just from purely a sort of a play perspective, I just think it's kind of a neat structure, because you get a chance to think about different things and you get a little break, so one thing doesn't get too stale while you're doing it. And you're always feeling like you're making progress by bouncing back and forth. In our case, yeah, it definitely... the design was just kind of driven from the concept of the game first. I guess we always had in our mind, we knew that we were for sure coming to, for example, PC, because we were trying to scratch the itch of these like classic CRPGs that we grew up playing. Mm-hmm. But the design really just kind of evolved organically around the core, which we'll get to, I guess, which it's a challenging, gothic, horror-themed role-playing game all about the psychological stress of your adventurers. And so what we're trying to do different, above all the other features, I guess, in the game, the unique hook to the game is that your heroes basically become more and more worn psychologically as they adventure, and you have to start considering their sort of mental health as well as their physical health in keeping your parties together and making progress towards your goal. And so a natural evolution of that was that for as big a part that, say, combat is in the game, we knew that sort of the emotional payoff and the unique payoff of the game has to be, okay, wow, we did this mission. Now I've got to pick up the pieces. This is my best fighter, but he's stressed out and he's traumatized from this battle, and I need to rest him in town. And so the town became, took on a life of its own, because as opposed to just a place that you go buy, for example, a bigger sword, we wanted it to be a place that you have to actually attend to your people. So you can put your heroes in the tavern to drink. You can send them to church to pray, and other activities that we that really revolve around stress relief.
Well, the reference has been made, obviously, before to things like Call of Cthulhu. I'm a big tabletop RPG fan. Like, I like the old pen and paper stuff. I used to do MERP back in the day, and Call of Cthulhu itself I'm a fan of. But it seems to have, like, other links too, that old tradition of pen and paper RPGs. I'm thinking of the commentator guy who almost seems to be a little bit Dungeon Master-esque, where he's just sort of giving you evil portents of what's coming and stuff like that. A voice chiming in every now and then to tell you things are going to hell reminds me of that pen and paper classic RPG thing.
Well, certainly the pen and paper experience is one that inspired the game. I grew up playing tons of those, and I think that specifically, when you think of, say, some of your, most enjoyable pen and paper RPG experiences, it's often, actual role playing, role, playing, or sort of freeform things like, the old stereotype or tradition that every adventure starts in a tavern, where you meet people and figure out what's going on. And so, but I think when you play with people that really get into the role playing, sometimes it's not all about having the most powerful character and doing the most incredible heroic things. People start bringing to the table like, oh, okay, well, I used to be religious, but now I've sworn it off. And so my character, has a strong reaction anytime religion is brought in, these sort of things that aren't systems, they're color, or to the story. So anyway, those moments that we've experienced in pen and paper games are kind of what inspired some of the moments in Darkest Dungeon, which is to say, like, the heroes can acquire a variety of different quirks. They might become religious, or they might just have like small physical defects or mental defects, like one, kleptomania is one that we put on the one of the first characters you you recruit, just so we can kind of demonstrate things in the game. So he'll be walking by a treasure and he might just take it, and you're thinking as the player, what? I didn't tell him to do that. And that really comes boils down like a key tenet to the game, which is you're not in absolute control of your heroes. They're little people kind of with their own desire to keep themselves alive and sometimes their own personality quirks, and you're more like sort of a manager of sorts, trying to get them to all work together and get your task done. Sometimes they do things that you didn't want them to do.
The stress and the fear and stuff that you've talked about, the characters do suffer these ill effects, and they can actually lead to death. They can actually have heart attacks and die.
Yes, that's right. So, you know, when you were mentioning kind of Lovecraftian, we're definitely Lovecraftian inspired in terms of, it's not an official Lovecraft mythos, but I think, you know, some of the, you know, you'll see kind of the dark gothic feel, the instead of sort of elves and dwarves and things like that, it's more, all the heroes are human, but there's a wide variety of sort of fantastical monsters, but they tend to realm more in the creepy Lovecraftian style, as opposed to, you know, for example, like bubblegum high fantasy. But
I've seen tentacles flying out of portals and stuff.
Yes, there's definitely some tentacled beasts around. And, you know, in the Lovecraft sort of mythos, you know, this concept of the frailty of the human psyche is very important. A lot of, for example, like Cthulhu games that have been made, they focus on sanity.
Yes.
You know, like, oh, you, and that was, of course, a theme with Lovecraft is, you know, is the human mind really equipped to understand our place in the cosmos? And, you know,
some things simply should not be seen.
Exactly. So with Darkest Dungeon, though, we actually wanted to focus more on stress. So it's more analogous to soldiers, you know, going to war. I think war games have modeled this kind of stuff really well for a long time. You know, even going back to some of the earliest, like Avalon Hill games, you know, the concept of morale was important because you realize that just because you have a well-equipped force of highly skilled people, if they're not in a condition to fight or a willingness to fight, then they're going to be, you know, your squad's going to be useless. And so we tried to hit more of that with Darkest Dungeon, which is, it's more of a fatigue thing as opposed to a sanity thing. But it's also a chance that they may become heroic. Sometimes as you get really stressful, that's where they might, you know, become stalwart and decide that, you know, they're not going to flee and they're going to give some bonuses to other characters in the group because this is the moment to make a stand. And ultimately, that's what Darkest Dungeon is about, is you can't have moments of heroism without moments of cowardice. And so we try to model both in there.
Well, now you've brought the game onto mobile. We should say it's on iPad only at the minute. It's not on actual mobiles. But I noticed, for example, you've kept the 16:9 aspect ratio of like a monitor or a TV screen, which means technically it would fit easily onto phones. Is there a reason? Is it just the size of the text, or is there a reason you've gone with iPad first?
Yes. I mean, it's exactly that, the size limitations. So it fits the tablet really well. There's enough screen real estate to see everything. And we have experimented with putting it on phone and certainly would love to. But what we found so far is it would just require such an undertaking to overhaul many of the UI screens. Because basically the difference between, getting on phone is we just can't squeak by with what we have. We'd have to thoroughly rework the screens. And that's a massive job because we, you know, we didn't sort of set it up to be easily done that way when we start developing. And so we're definitely kind of pushed with that decision of just how much work it would require to do well. Whereas, you know, on tablet, it's very much a natural fit. And we accidentally made a really touch-friendly interface.
Oh, that's good.
You know, honestly, I think on, you know, one of the reasons we're super excited for the iPad release is that it almost feels like it's most natural control state. You know, we have combat skill icons that, you know, you tap to select the skill you want to do, you tap to select the enemy. I think the tapping is more natural in some cases. We have drag and drop, which is even better with a finger than a mouse. We were in early access on Steam, and so that, you know, had to be our entire priority while we were doing that. And we had already committed to coming to, we had signed a deal very early on coming to console and needed to honor that. And so the iPad has sort of been sitting there in our heads for quite a long time, like that we know it was going to be good, or, you know, hopefully anyway, and really wanted to get to it, but it just took us a while to actually get there. Well, and now, I'm super thrilled because also the gameplay loop, like you were kind of alluding to earlier with Dungeon and Town, works well from a session perspective, like you're kind of saying, you know, feels mobile just from the standpoint of you can go do a quest when you have a few minutes, and then you can, you know, when you have a few more minutes, you could like deal with your guys in town and so on.
That auto saving is also part of the brutality of the game, isn't it? Because there's no way back, there's no way to undo anything, and death is permanent here. It is a game that you have to expect to die, like a lot of roguelikes and things. You go in going, right, this is my first or second FTL run. It's probably not going to be my last.
Yep.
Did you expect it to be as well received as it was? Because it really got quite a lot of buzz when it came out, and it's been, you know, praised from most quarters. I mean, I haven't played enough of it. I'm sure it's great, but I haven't played enough of it to, you know, cast a proper judgment myself or anything. But there's no doubting that it got a lot of love. Were you thinking that maybe, like, because you've made it deliberately quite tough and quite sort of sadistic, and were you thinking, did we go too far? Have we made it too hard and people are going to be put off? Or?
Well, we definitely, our strategy was... internally, we would say Darkest Dungeon is not a game for everyone, because we knew that we were making some design decisions that were very specific in how, I guess, punishing is true. But, you know, it's more that we wanted the game to have consequence. So we didn't really decide, OK, we're going to make a game that is punishing and just makes you feel like crap. It was more that we wanted your decisions to really matter, and that's where the auto saving and the permadeath came from. Is we wanted you to get attached to these heroes and feel that you're in control of when to abandon a quest and when to do these sorts of things. So we wanted your decisions to matter, because I think a lot of games are structured where it's a puzzle to solve and you're fully expected to solve the puzzle, and if you don't solve it right, just reload and try again, which is fine. But you know, for Darkest Dungeon, we want it to be more about this constant risk reward. How far do I push my people? And if I push them so far that they get wiped out, you know, we want you to look in the mirror a little bit and say, well, maybe I shouldn't have done that. So as a result, I guess we thought, let's make a game that appeals really strongly to us. You know, I don't know if a small number of people is the right word, but certainly not a widespread market. Okay. And so, yeah, it's been a surprise just how well it's received. Cause I think in a way of making something that is aimed at a niche or whatever you want to call it, that it gives you the chance to creatively really flex. So my business partner and the creative director, Chris Brasa, he's done just an excellent job of like holding that torch, if you forgive the metaphor, of making sure that we never strayed too far from what, you know, we initially wanted to do. And that when we were facing those hard decisions of, okay, well, we could do this and it'd be much more accessible, you know, we were able to kind of stay true. And in doing so, yeah, I think that's like counterintuitively made the game appeal more strongly.
Before we go, it's released at £4.99, £4.99 in the UK, and I assume dollars. Is that an intro launch price that's cheaper and it's going to go up, or is that the actual price? Because that's cheaper than I expected.
Yeah, it's pricing is a black art in itself. We've talked to a lot of people, including Apple, who, you know, gives guidance. I mean, they don't obviously tell you what to do, but they try to give you good guidance on what's working, what's not. We've spoken with other developers that I think, for example, like the Banner Saga developers are great people. Their game also kickstarted before ours, and you know, we just feel in a way like kindred souls. And they're like one cycle ahead of us always, or maybe almost two. But I think they've experimented. You know, that one release they did it like the premium, like $19.99, I think, and then another at lower. And I don't know, after talking to a lot of people, we felt that this matches the platform. I think that's the hardest part about pricing is, on one hand, you try to say, what is the game worth? And then on the other hand, you say, well, what platform I'm selling at? And, you know, it's a black art, so who knows? We'll see how it does.
Out and about this week, you've just heard from the developer. Let's talk Darkest Dungeon. I have now had a chance to play this a lot more since the interview. Unfortunately, as you heard, it only just went live yesterday evening, which is when we were able to play it. And it has lived up to my expectations so far. John Monday did the review over on Pocket Gamer. He was playing it all night and all day and has, you know, put his number to it. He gave it a very glowing review. I've just done the video review over on AppSpy. And as you heard, it's dark, it's challenging, it's grim, it's beautifully drawn, it's quite complex, it's punishing. I have died a bunch already, and it's gone tough. And it has that feeling that you get. I compare it to two things, which is cannon fodder way back in the Amiga, and a more current one, which is XCOM, where you're constantly getting new recruits in, and your old beloved recruits whom you've been working with a while just die unceremoniously, and you're like, oh, I suppose that's over with then, and you have to go and move on to a new person and train them up. So there's that heartbreak involved. But what I really like is the unpredictability of it all. It has this incredibly unpleasant and cruel feeling where when you get attacked, as you heard, you get your sanity, or in this case stress meters, knocked up, and suddenly your guys will just, they'll flash into the screen, and it's really funny because you get a shot of like still frame of them grabbing the sides of their head in red, and then underneath it'll be like anguish. you're like, this is awesome. And that anguish will suddenly make them freak out, and then they'll just be like muttering to themselves throughout the fight. You'll see text pop up going, oh god, I'm gonna die, we've got to get out of here, the darkness is closing in. And then they suddenly attack their fellow comrade, or they'll just like turn around and like run up and change their position in the fighting group and screw you over, and you know, get loads of debuffs. And being in a bad state of mind, it's not good for fighting, got to keep the morale up. So you've got a lot of things you have to monitor, and the game itself, it's probably for a specific kind of player. You need to like these challenging dark games. If you're put off by difficulty or retrying things, it'll annoy you. The downside of it that we had was also touched on in the interview, I think, which is that it's been crammed down onto an iPad. It does work. It works well in so much as the touchscreen stuff is good. The only negative point is it does mean everything is smaller. It does mean it's like you're playing the game on a CRT 14-inch monitor from back in the day, only it's even smaller because it's an iPad, so it's like 10-inch. So it does mean that some of the text is kind of small, and some of the buttons are kind of small, and it can be a little bit fiddly. But that was sort of to be expected. That's pretty much the only downside. The game itself we've really taken to, and I know you wanted to play it. I would advise you do.
Yeah, no, I'm so stoked to be able to play it on iPad finally.
Yeah. We were very pleased with it. So that's available right now, £4.99, $4.99, which is a bargain considering the launch price of the Steam version, and it's the full thing. So Darkest Dungeon, go get on it. Forma 8 has now hit the Nintendo Switch, and that's a game that we reviewed when it was on iPad and iPhone, and we liked it. Metroidvania-style thing, minimal design, almost a little bit like Badlands in that silhouette style, where you're floating around through caves, but it's got that backtracking, big map stuff going on. We gave it an 8 out of 10. We liked it pretty good. Now it's available on Switch for $9.99, a bit more expensive. We'll see if people take to it over there. Radiation City has come out as well. This is a sequel to Radiation Island, which is a game from like 2015, I think it was. We've covered it in a couple of videos on AppSpy, and it did well. It got a lot of popularity around it. It has a almost Far Cry-ish open world exploration first person feel, but you're running around an island and it's full of loads of radioactive zombies.
Yeah, see, does it play as good as it looks it does?
As good as it looks it does.
I know, I was just saying.
Suddenly went Yorkshire. As good as it looks it does. Oh, lovely. Well, I mean, I wasn't that super sold on it the first time, because the thing by making it open world, the first game, by having that huge scope, it meant that it all looked a bit shonky and unrefined. And it has that crafty aspect as well, that survivalist thing where it goes dark and all the zombies come out, and if you don't have any flames to light your way, you're literally stumbling around in pitch black and all that. So it's still got that going on, the difference being it's transposed the location. That's pretty much the size of it. I've only played literally like 15 minutes of it just to fire it up and see what's changed. Not a great deal from an initial glance. It's £4.99 as well, so it's sort of expensive. If it's like the first game, there's quite a lot going on, and you can get a lot of hours of gameplay out of building the character up and all the crafting, and you know, there's a lot to explore. I don't know whether it's high quality enough to bother my ass with, but we'll have a review for it up certainly within the next few days. So Radiation City, £4.99 out on the mobiles. Bertram Fiddle, A Bleaker Predicament is the name of the game. And this is the second chapter or sequel to Bertram Fiddle, which was a very cutesy, cartoony, point-and-click adventure, which is a little bit like a Sherlock Holmes-style thing, only you play a man whose character art makes it look like he has a worm for a nose. But we liked the first game. It was, like, fun and daft and, you know, point-and-click adventure in the old-school style from LucasArts, and that evil plot, lots and lots of silly English anachronisms, and you know, people saying, oh, it's time for tea, and all of that. I only realized this from seeing it appear on my Twitter feed. Old App Spy and Pocket Gamer cohort Peter Willington is one of the voices in this.
Is he?
Plays a little cameo role as one of the characters. So that's just me giving full disclosure there. I didn't realize till a couple of days ago, but I'm saying it so that no one can accuse me of corruption or whatever. But that's out on iOS, £3.99 or $3.99. I haven't played this one, but I did play the first one, and we liked it, and it looks to be more of the same. You're our Telltale girl, so Minecraft Story Mode, that has now hit the Switch.
It has, and there's even more good news.
Oh, yeah?
That there's more Telltale games coming to the Switch.
Oh, yes.
Which was announced earlier this week, and I'm pretty stoked about it.
Yeah, so we got the... This one's being released as a full all-chapters thing now, so it's £34.99, or $39.99, so you can grab it whole as a whole big bundle. What are the ones that we confirmed? Because we spoke before about how they'd got a Nintendo compliance dude in, or were advertising for one, and we thought there's probably more coming, and now they've confirmed it. What have they confirmed?
Yeah, during a stream a couple of days ago at Gamescom... Job, I forget his second name, sorry everyone. Job confirmed that Guardians of the Galaxy, Minecraft Season 2 and Batman both, well I think it's supposed to be both the first and second season are going to be coming to Switch as well.
So the current ones, they're not bothering with the really old ones at this point, just the new ones at the minute.
Yeah, just the kind of the most recent ones. I have heard though, like I obviously haven't played Minecraft Story Mode on Switch as of yet, but I hear that they're is a little bit of an issue with the performance.
Oh, really?
Yeah, just a wee one. So, like, a lot of people were saying on, like, Reddit and stuff, being like, oh, it's good to start off with, but then the frame rates get a little bit jittery and it gets a little bit stuttery and stuff, so...
Telltale game. Not performing brilliantly, you say?
Hey, mine is usually actually okay. Like, when I play on the PC, it's usually okay. It's just, like, you know, disappearing hair and stuff like that.
It's just disappearing body parts. There's nothing to worry about.
No one needs everything. Jesus, James.
Good Lord. Okay, so that's good news for Telltale people, but check out the reviews and maybe wait till they patch it and fix it, if they ever do. Karma Incarnation 1 is an adventure game, lovely cartoon style. Again, that silhouette sort of thing. Haven't played it. We're definitely going to be reviewing this one, I think, because it looks ever so lovely. That's £1.99 or $1.99, and then there's a few puzzlers. So Block Droppin' is a free-to-play block puzzler, which you can get on just iOS at the minute. And there's another puzzle bobble called Puzzle Bobble Journey, which is iOS and Android, and it's £4.99.
It's
a premium one of these bubble popping games that I always associate with free-to-play stuff now.
Yeah, I think isn't it like the original though?
Well, Puzzle Bobble, yeah. I think it was one of the ones that really popularised it. I still remember people playing it on the original PlayStation.
Oh, my God.
The Puzzle Bobble, the first ones. For me, I had no interest in the game because I was still playing Bubble Bobble, the original and best version of this game featuring those two dragons. But this is obviously a different puzzly thing. But yeah, I guess it has a very big fan base, and I'm just surprised Taisho are going full premium on this, and not even cheap premium, like £5 for your little bubble popping game like Bubble Witch Saga, which you can play for free. So brave, I would say.
Yeah, well, they've got the fan base.
Yeah.
Sort of.
Well, we'll find out. That's what I'm sure. So, yeah, you can get that right now for real monies. And finally, Shadow Fight 2 has got a special edition version. So it's £4.99 on iOS and Android. What did they add to it? You told me earlier.
Yeah, they added like a chapter to do with Sensei. Learn something about him throughout an entire chapter. You don't have to grind for energy and stuff anymore. I think it's energy. Can't remember.
It's infinite energy, no ads. That's the big push they're making by going, look, it's premium now, and we're not going to make you play the same mission over and over again, or wait 8 hours for the energy to come back.
Yeah, and that's probably going to be quite cool for like people who really enjoy Shadow Fight, but absolutely cannot stand the whole free-to-play thing about it.
So we'll see if they put their money where their mouth is by going, oh, I hate this free-to-play stuff. And they go, all right, then, give us Fiver. And they go, no. And you go, well... You've brought this on yourselves, haven't you?
They sort of just look disapprovingly at their audience.
Yeah, well, That's about it. I felt like we've tried to cram as much as we can into the 45 minutes there with the interview, because there was a lot going on this week. So apologies if we feel like we skipped over stuff. But you can obviously see all of the news stories. There's tons of them up on Pocket Gamer over the week. And check out the video reviews on AtSpy as usual. Join us again next week and we'll chat more about, I don't know, should we talk about some games? Should we do that next week?
Maybe. We'll see how we feel.
All right. Potential games chat next week, or perhaps we'll just talk about your cat, Em.
Yeah. Yeah, right.
How's she doing at the moment? She was sunning herself in the conservatory last I heard.
Yeah, she's grand. She's getting chased by the dog, so she's kind of just scarpered out there to kind of escape.
Man. I was going to say life. It's an easy life being a cat, but sounds quite traumatic being yours.
To be fair, she's fast asleep right now, so I can't complain.
All right, that sounds nice. And with the weekend coming up, I'll look forward to doing the very same thing without the dog chasing bit.
You got bunnies, though.
That's true, but I can kick their ass. They're much bigger than them.
No, but you wouldn't, because they're so tiny and fluffy.
If they went full rabid and they came at me, then I do love them with all my heart, but they would go over the balcony.
That's so mean.
Hey, but look at
that. I'll just get like a little jug or something and try and just put them. No, just rabbits don't have rabies.
Oh, yes, they do. They get myxomatosis, which is basically rabbit rabies.
Yeah, but you could put like a wash bowl on them or something and be like, calm down.
A wash bowl on them, so they look like one of those Zumba Hoover things. Only with foaming mouths. No, I'm sorry. They're going in the river, if they try and kill me. It's me or them, Em, in this fictional scenario.
I don't know who I choose. You know, bunnies are so cute.
Oh, outrageous on that. Horrifying final note. Thank you all for listening, and we'll see you next week for more. Bye-bye.
Bye.